Come in, Professor Peter Lynam, are you there?
Hello, yes, I'm here.
Now, what are we talking about this afternoon for That's the Spirit?
I thought we would look into the religious background of the banning of alcohol, well, a sudden banning of alcohol by the Qatari government for the Football World Cup.
Yes, and now there's, biggish issue because they've had, you know, they got the Soccer World Cup about a decade ago, and it's not until 2 days out from the festival that they've decided that they're not going to sell alcohol at a sporting event. I guess there's a few big brands behind it, which might be a bit miffed, and also a few punters that have made the trek to Qatar that might be somewhat surprised.
Yes, that's right. So I guess the short notice of this is highly irritating to sports fans. Although, of course, it's not the complete banning of alcohol. There are still places you can get alcohol in Qatar, if you're in a foreign hotel, for example. Mm. And apparently, if you're an elite, in the elite VIP stands, you've got access to alcohol, especially champagne. But I don't suppose that's what the fans are probably hoping to drink, most of them.
It's not, I mean, it's not that surprising that they have banned alcohol, because it's, you know, they have a very conservative approach to it usually. So, I mean, you couldn't be too miffed, really.
Yes, I mean, I think clearly the last minute aspect of it, it's unclear whether this was pressure within Qatar, which in theory should have no such pressure, because there's only, you know, an absolutist ruler who doesn't need to consult anybody for the decisions that he makes. So there's no obvious reason why he suddenly made this decision, but one can assume that there's always been a bit of tension in a very Muslim state, indeed in the Wahhabi Muslim state, to maintain the strictest of regulations. And I think that's the bit that needs a little bit of explanation. I mean, Saudi Arabia is normally associated with Wahhabism, but Qatar and quite a number of the other Gulf states share in exactly the same viewpoint.
Yes.
And I think, to be fair, Wahhabism is simply insisting that you should enforce the strictest regulations that the Quran and Islamic scholars have always maintained, and that says no alcohol. Of course, in Islam, there's always room for the godless to do what they want to and be condemned for it. And what's curious is that you might say that they've decided that the state is going to make it harder for the godless to be godless, if you see what I mean.
Yes. Okay.
Of course, it is, though, fair to say that there's always been this tension in this. Is Islam simply a private behaviour? It's never a private behaviour. So therefore, how much does the state enforce Islam? And very obviously, in the Islamic-dominated territories, I mean, always the goal has been towards an enforcement of the strictest regulations of the Prophet.
I mean, what sort of issues do you think they've managed to avoid by banning alcohol at the soccer stadiums for the soccer for the Football World Cup? Do you, I mean, do you think that the local people would have been unhappy about alcohol being served at football games?
Yes, I think they would have. I think that is one factor, that they're very, very aware that ordinary people in Qatar do not have access to alcohol except in sort of very secretive means and ways of getting it. So, I mean, obviously in most Islamic states, there are places to get alcohol, but mostly you have to be hosted in an international hotel. Those are the only legal ways. Presumably there's plenty of alcohol that circulates secretly. And it is always interesting when Muslim people talk about their attitude towards alcohol, where there's often a certain ambiguity. You know, they oppose it, and yet you know that there's widespread use of alcohol in most Islamic, among most Islamic males anyway. So I think the bit that I find intriguing is maybe it was the people, but I wonder too if there's a kind of fundamental issue involved in getting the World Cup, and it's the tension of the that all Islamic states are facing at the moment. What do we do to be internationally competitive and yet to maintain our Muslim purity? And of course, this was part of the issue behind the Islamic revolutions of back in 2013-14, because the people there really did want, did call for the greater enforcement of Islam, and they were watching their rulers compromising on these issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there probably is an issue in the wider Muslim public that people are nervous about. They feel that this is such a public flouting of what were the restrictions that being a faithful Muslim imposed upon a state as well as individuals.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that this outright ban is the easiest way for them? I mean, it's not really a middle ground between the Western fans' taste and the Qatar sort of conservative culture. I guess it is what it is. But do you think there was any hope of finding a middle ground?
Well, you could argue that they've still found a modest middle ground, and that the fans can go home to their hotels and drink all they like once they're safely inside the international hotels.
Yes.
So that might be how they look at it. There's no evidence at all, however, that Qatar showed any willingness to talk over this proposal before they imposed it. And that's quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because it suggests that, you know, fundamentally, the people who set up the various terms by which Qatar got awarded the World Cup, when it has no soccer tradition whatsoever, of course, was not fully reviewed by the public authorities until it got close to the event.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And maybe that is a real issue for anybody who wants to change the Gulf states.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a sort of a game being played between the modernizers and the traditionalists. And you see, this comes back to the heart of what is Wahhabism. We've talked Wahhabism on and off at various times in the past. But bear in mind that in the end, Wahhabism is simply an approach which says, let's be strict in enforcing the regulations, the moral regulations of Islam. And so, however you read them, whether it bans women from driving and often these are interpreted against changing modern conditions, that the people feel Wahhabism is quite a strong tradition among Muslim preachers, which says Islam ought to be strictly enforced.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Muslim preachers preachers in the mosque are going to consistently, they're not going to call for a middle ground. And so states have to decide how far they go against the religious opinions. And there's possibly a specific background. Who knows if the Qatar sheikh didn't go to Friday prayers and hear a sermon directed on this very issue. Mm-hmm. It's possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, as a potential punter heading along to the event, surely you couldn't be surprised that this has suddenly happened, you know, mere days before things begin at the Football World Cup. But I mean, yeah, it would be just part and parcel of travelling there, right? I guess probably the event that, you know, FIFA and Budweiser would obviously be a bit ticked off, but I mean,
they were obviously,
yeah,
yes, and it is utterly paradoxical, of course, from the point of view of our typical Western way of thinking, that if you've got commercial contractors that are supplying money, then you do not just go sensationally just treating them as though they count for nothing.
Yes.
And the Football World Cup is going to have to do some big explaining to its patrons and sponsors, I would have thought.
Yes.
But as you say, surely in the first instance, this must have been an issue that was obviously going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
They may have thought they'd found a way around it, but in the end, this is the nature of politics in a one-party state, but you know, where there is no constitutional government,
mm-hmm.
Then things are going to rapidly happen.
Yes.
And I think it's interesting because I think it might set off ripples, wider ripples, about the ways in which how far Islam ought to compromise in the context of mixing with the wider world.
Yes.
And that could be very interesting.
Do you think there's? I mean, obviously Budweiser being an American brand. Do you think there's any scope for the Americans to get a bit pissed off at, you know, the American government to get pissed off with Qatar?
Well, the Americans are actually in a very fragile situation as regards the whole of the Gulf states and Saudi, the Saudi government at the moment. Because for a series of reasons, especially you know the killing of the American in the Turkish embassy, mm-hmm. in the embassy in Turkey, there's lots of reasons why it is general American opinion is pretty negative towards the Gulf states.
Yes,
and it feels like you know we're paying the price. And we're not being delivered something that is pro-American at all.
Mm-hmm.
But then they've got the oil. And you do have to remember that at the end, it's a question of whether oil or alcohol speaks more loudly. And I mean, that's the deepest question.
Yes. Oil. Oil, of course.
I would have thought at the moment, oil, especially out of the miserable ends of the COP22 with its disasters.
Yes. All right. Hey, Peter Lynham, thank you very much for chatting to us this evening. We'll look forward to speaking with you next Monday.
Very good. See you then.